The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
So welcome to is our showcase argument, or as I heard in the elevator, the slap down. that is the culmination of the first semester of legal rhetoric. You'll do an argument as a culmination of the second semester of legal rhetoric, so sit back and enjoy this one. Tonight, as you know, we have the argument in Madison Barker versus the United States of America. Paul Figley is arguing for the United States. Penny. And Bethany Dickman. Yay! Is arguing for Madison Barker. This is a motion to dismiss that has been filed by the United States, and we are in trial court. I'm going to turn it over to our bailiff. Have it right now.
All right! Presiding over docket number 123-09, Madison Barker v. United States.
Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Paul Figley. I represent the United States. I would like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine, Counselor.
Your Honor, this is a case involving relatively simple facts. The plaintiff left her home backing up, carrying a piece of art, stepped on a package, and fell. She's brought suit against the United States, claiming that the United States negligently left the package on the porch of her house. There are two independent reasons why this case can't proceed. The first is that there is no actionable duty under Mississippi law. The second is that the United States Federal Tort Claims Act has an exception for injuries arising from the negligent transmission of postal material. Under Mississippi law, there is simply no duty not to leave a package on someone's porch.
Counselor, isn't there a duty to avoid placing obstacles where homeowners and their invitees may trip over them?
Stated that way, possibly, but I think it's much more limited than that. If you look at the situation where a person creates a hazard by putting a hard-to-see object on a porch, and a person uses the porch or the door to the porch in a normal fashion, and some hazard is created, there may be an obligation to warn the person about it or not place the object there.
What if a person places an object in a situation where there is a high likelihood of creation of a hazard?
If it's a hazard that would be created for someone using the porch in a normal fashion, I would agree.
And that you don't believe to be this case?
No, not at all.
Can you explain?
Yes. None of the cases that are available to us have found a duty in a circumstance where a large package was left. The Mississippi Supreme Court decision in Minor versus Engineering Services Company did not involve a package.
It involved a long tripwire, and arguably this package, which had dimensions approximating, what were the precise dimensions of the package?
The package in our case?
Yes.
6.5 feet by 1 foot by 10 inches.
Do we have the dimensions of the porch?
Of the porch, we do not, Your Honor.
But is it fair to say that the package took up the... Certainly, there's no doorway that's 6.5 feet long, so it blocked the entire
certainly,
doorway.
Certainly, according to the allegations in the complaint, the package was in front of the door.
Blocking the entire doorway.
That's not clear, Your Honor.
Such that anybody leaving the house would have the option either of stepping over or tripping over the package.
I think that anyone leaving the house in a normal fashion would see the package and could then either step over it, move it, or take some other action. People leave packages on porches. People leave presents on porches. They leave cookies on porches. They leave May baskets on porches. They leave flowers on porches and groceries.
Is there no circumstance, Counselor, that in which a package could give rise to foreseeable harm in your judgment?
No, Your Honor.
A package full of fireworks?
Well, the fireworks may go off, but the fact that the package itself, the fireworks don't go off, would not be a problem. This is simply not an area of the law where people have sued. It isn't there. If you look at slip and fall cases involving linoleum, oily floors, wax floors, there are all kinds of cases. But there are not cases involving packages.
Could the Postal Service leave a package so big that it completely obstructed the doorway?
Yes, and there might be a cause of action for false imprisonment, although that would
but
be barred.
But not for negligence.
That would be barred. If for negligence, you'd need four things: duty, breach of duty, proximate cause, and damages. So if by blocking that door, someone wasn't able to leave during a fire, there might be liability. But there wouldn't be liability because someone did not see the package or tripped over it. And we know there are no cases because, as the Shell case points out, all of the attorneys for all the parties were unable to find any case involving similar facts to that in Shell, which was a package on a porch case.
That we haven't previously encountered a case with a 6.5-foot package completely obstructing a doorway does not, of course, mean that we'll never find negligence under the circumstances.
That's right, Your Honor. But if it hasn't happened with all the packages that have been left on porches for at least 200 years, there's reason to think that there's not a duty. And there isn't a duty because if you look at the potential risk versus the potential benefit of leaving packages on porches, there's a tremendous social benefit. It speeds commerce. It encourages romance. It fosters good relations with neighbors. And the downside is minimal.
Counselor, why isn't this a question of fact? This seems to me a question particularly unsuited for resolution at this juncture as a matter of law.
With all due respect, Your Honor, it's absolutely clear that this is the kind of thing that can be resolved as a matter of law. It's exactly what the court did in Shell. It had a similar case involving, frankly, a more dangerous package because it was smaller and harder to see. And the court said no reasonable person could find a flaw or a mistake in the behavior of the delivery person who left that package there.
But the implications of plaintiff's argument in Shell were, if accepted, then no package could ever be left by any door, because all she argued was simply the placement of the package by the door, notwithstanding notice, was enough to constitute negligence.
That's what she alleged, and that's what the court rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that the Mississippi courts do dispose of cases as a matter of law, finding no duty. Minor case, the court specifically alludes to the decision in, I believe it's Green, where the court found that leaving a pole across a path or a pipe across a path was something that would not give rise to liability. So it is absolutely appropriate for the court to deal with this as a matter of law, and that's frankly what the court's responsibility is. It's fine for the jury to be able to hear a case where there is an established duty, but it's for the court to decide in the first instance whether, as a matter of law, the allegations give rise to an actionable duty.
Counselor, I'd like to focus on your second argument.
Yes, sir.
Whether and to what extent this case is barred by the negligent transmission exception?
The waiver of sovereign immunity in the Federal Tort Claims Act includes a number of specific exceptions. One of those is 2680B, and it bars suit for any claim arising out of the loss, miscarriage, or negligent transmission of letters or postal matter. The issue that we have in this case is whether negligent transmission includes the decision or the handling of mail leaving it on a porch. The decision of the court in Bono squarely deals with this, and it does so looking at the overall parameters of the Federal Tort Claims Act and the reason for its enactment. A contrary decision was reached in RALA. In Bono, the court made the important point that the postal exception, 2680B, bars suits for mail bombs. So when someone puts a mail bomb in the mail, intending to kill another person, and the package is delivered and then opened and then kills that person, suit can be brought.
Counselor, what content, I just want to be clear at the outset, what content you are ascribing to negligent transmission?
I would see negligent transmission as covering negligence of a postal employee regarding postal matter between the time that the postal matter is accepted through the time that it is delivered.
Why does that not also encompass loss and miscarriage? It seems to me, thus construed so broadly, you don't need the words loss and miscarriage in your statute.
You would need it to cover situations where the loss or miscarriage was not arising from negligence.
Okay.
So, in the Bono case, the court made note of Gager and Robinson, suits in which people were either injured or killed by mail bombs. In RALA, the court doesn't specifically mention mail bombs, although it does cite Robinson without coming to what I think is the key point, which is that it involved a mail bomb. If RALA is correct and the postal exception does not cover everything that happens from the time of receipt until the time of delivery, then the Postal Service would be potentially liable for mail bombs. And the problem with that is, if the Postal Service is liable for mail bombs, it's going to have to examine every package that goes through the mail, and with the advent of poisons, is that white powder that...
Anthrax.
Anthrax. Every package would have to be closely examined.
I want to make sure I perfectly understand your argument. So let's say we have a mailman, and the mailman comes up and delivers a package, and at the same time eats a banana. And he drops the banana peel and the package side by side.
Yes, Your Honor.
The homeowner leaves, slips on the banana, and the Postal Service is liable.
Arguably, right? Yes.
Okay.
For the negligence of
Okay. Homeowner leaves, slips on the package, and your argument is that that's utterly different.
Well, that's what Congress said. If you talk about a typical mail truck accident where the postal driver negligently drives the mail truck and hits somebody, then there is liability.
On whether the mail truck is full of mail or not?
No. There's liability whether there's mail in there or not, because that's not part of the transmission of the mail. But if the mail truck driver is angry and intentionally runs into someone, that's assault and battery, and suit is plainly barred by the Federal Tort Claims Act.
Where do you find support in the plain language for this negligent driving postman exception to the exception?
The negligent, when Congress enacted the FTCA, it was very clear in saying that it had intended for mail trucks and automobile accidents in the typical case to be within the waiver of sovereign immunity.
Well, it certainly wasn't clear as a matter of plain language. It didn't write that into the statute.
I believe, with all due respect, Your Honor,
by
saying the United States would be liable as a private person would be, and not including language that could fairly be read to include or bar negligent driving, that negligent driving is within the waiver of sovereign immunity.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
Ms. Dickman?
May it please the court, my name is Bethany Dickman and I represent the plaintiff Madison Barker in this matter. Your Honor, this motion to dismiss should not be granted. First, because as required by Section 1346B of the Federal Tort Claims Act, a private person would be liable under these circumstances in Mississippi law. There is a duty to use reasonable care under Mississippi law, which the delivery person breached when he left the package for my client. Secondly, Section 2680B, the postal matter exception, does not bar this suit because that exception only applies to damages to the package itself and not separate acts of negligence by postal employees acting within the scope of their employment. First, with regard to the requirement that a private person be liable in this jurisdiction, Mississippi courts have indeed established a duty of care, and they've specifically articulated this duty as a duty to exercise due regard for the rights of others, and that's the principle articulated by the Minor case. And this duty is very much related to the nature of the obstruction and the circumstances involved. So, for example, in Minor, where you have the measuring tape left in front of the plaintiff's door, which she tripped over, the court noted that this was very unexpected, the surveyors gave no warning to her that it was there. In contrast with the situation in Shell, which the defendant mentioned, where the package was very small, the plaintiff herself in that case acknowledged that the delivery service had knocked on the door and she was going to the door to answer it. And
what do you say to your opponent's argument that in Shell, arguably the package was more dangerous because it was smaller and therefore easier to miss?
I would argue that it's actually less dangerous because it's much smaller, half an inch in height, which is something that that certainly isn't quite the tripping hazard that a package such as the one delivered to my client was. And
in that regard, didn't your client have reason to suspect that a package might arrive? Wasn't this something that she ordered in the ordinary course of her business?
Yes, my client did order. This was a package of neon tubes, which she used to construct her signs, one of which was damaged in her fall. But I think the fact that she tripped over the package demonstrates just how unexpected it was. Yes, she did order such packages, but she had the spacious porch, and it was raining, and as you noted earlier, this package was so large that there's no way it could have fit into a doorway. So she had no reason to expect it to be right in front of the doorway when it fit more naturally onto the side of the porch.
Now, the postman in this case, one could say, went above and beyond the call of duty in trying to keep her package out of the rain and in resituating it both times that it fell.
Well, Your Honor,
are we not penalizing? Are we holding him to a higher standard because he was so conscientious?
Well, Your Honor, his duty was really was not with regard to the package. It was with regard to my client to make sure she was not injured by the package. And indeed, under the exception, if the postal person had left the package on the porch and it was destroyed in the rain, she would have no cause of action in that circumstance. But here, because he knew that this package was dangerous, he elected to place it to the side of her door. He knew that it had fallen several times, and he left knowing, after propping it up several times, he knew that it was likely to slip again. He certainly did not use the care my client due to my client under the reasonable care in Mississippi.
Counselor, I'd like to focus now on the negligent transmission argument. And in particular, I'm troubled that the terminology employed by Congress, any claim arising out of, that is broad, if any language I've ever seen Congress construct.
Yes, that language is particularly broad, but that language is related to the words loss, miscarriage, and the phrase negligent transmission itself. And I think it's easiest to understand the language of this exception by looking at the original rationale, which involved cases involving telegraph transmission, where...
I know that that's the rationale.
That's in the legislative history of the exception, Your Honor. And in those cases, negligent transmission involved the inadvertent substitution of words, which then changed the meaning of the transcribed message between the sender and the receiver. So the statute was concerned with alteration of the message in transit and damages flowing from that alteration. And this translates to damage to postal material itself. For example, in the telegraph context, an altered message might lead to an imprudent business decision or emotional distress, or perhaps the person reading it becomes very shocked and has a heart attack.
But in the telegraph context, because the transmission is virtually instantaneous, it's like an email, as opposed to kind of snail mail, there's a long period of time between sending and receipt. How can I draw a line and eliminate everything that happens during that time, given this breadth of congressional language?
Well, Your Honor, I think because the statute was intended to foreclose just those sorts of claims, the claims that arose from damage or alteration to the objects being transmitted themselves. So in a similar context, you would have to draw the line too, that if I sent a package with an expensive vase in it and it broke during transit, granted, which would be much longer than a telegram, I would be unable to bring a suit for damages resulting from that the negligence on the part of the Postal Service, and any damages flowing from that, even if I cut my hands picking up the shards of glass and things of that nature.
Your opponent was about, before time told, was about to tell me where he found support for the car exception. Apparently everybody agreed in Congress that negligent driving was actionable. Negligent driving by postmen. Where do you find that in the statute?
Yes, that's certainly evident from the legislative history, that in the 1940s, Congress was very concerned with the rising use of postal vehicles and the potential for accidents. But that arises by implication in the statute. If one reads the statute narrowly to where negligent transmission encompasses only damage to the packages and postal material itself, then by implication it excludes other torts such as negligent driving by postal employees and other torts such as that at issue in this case.
I think the COSAC case, which I saw referenced in one of the cases in the briefs, actually uses that to read negligent transmission narrowly. It says essentially the loss, miscarriage, or negligent transmission of letters. By use of that terminology, Congress excluded by implication negligent handling. So certainly the COSAC court believed that the language ought to be construed narrowly given that purpose.
Yes, the COSAC court did certainly believe that. And it noted that the postal matter itself, the postal exception itself, was much narrower than other exceptions to the Federal Tort Claims Act. And it read it with that in mind, the idea that the government was waiving immunity for other sorts of accidents by implication.
What do you say to the RILA court's point, which I thought was fairly well taken, that this is a situation where you almost never have witnesses, and thus, you know, a core purpose of the government of Congress in enacting the exceptions was to eliminate those crazy lawsuits all over the place that are virtually insusceptible of proof?
Yes, that was certainly an important objective behind the postal matter exception. But here, at least in this case, we certainly have a witness. Ms. Barker's friend was helping her carry a package and saw her fall. And allowing this sort of case to proceed doesn't necessarily open the courts up to tons of lawsuits. First of all, the government's exposure is still limited by Section 1346. A private person would still have to be liable in these circumstances, and that varies by jurisdiction, as the Bono case demonstrates, where New Jersey obviously doesn't allow liability in such a case. But also, the USPS generally delivers the mail via mailboxes and mail slots, and delivering packages is not as frequent as delivery of regular mail, whereas private parties, private delivery services, do not have access to patrons or to mailboxes. And the government can also invoke the discretionary function exception, which it declined to do in this case. Another important policy concern behind the statute is the fact that customers of the Postal Service can mitigate damages to postal matter and loss of postal matter through registering the mail and insuring the mail. But that simply is not available to people like my clients, where she did mitigate the damage to the destroyed neon tubes by the fact that the sender had insured them, but insurance doesn't help, doesn't make her whole in the case of the sorts of injuries that she sustained in this case. Additionally, another important concern behind the statute was the potential for fraudulent claims, which also doesn't exist in trip and fall cases and automobile accident cases.
Why not?
Because again, there's witnesses, and it's much less difficult to prove damages in cases like my client's, where she has a broken sign and physical injuries, whereas in cases such as the kind that the postal matter exception was meant to encompass, where the mail lost a letter containing notice of my $1 million inheritance, those are much more difficult to prove and open the floodgates to all sorts of fraudulent claims.
What do you say, just taking you back for a sec, to your opponent's argument that we can rule on the duty question as a matter of law? I find that a particularly vexing argument.
Well, there's certainly many questions of fact still in this case that I don't think can be resolved at this point in the litigation. Certainly, there is no case precisely on point here in Mississippi. There's no case with similar facts. The closest case we have is the minor case where there was a chain. So and cases outside the jurisdiction have conflicting resolutions in the instance of packages, and we have this open question of whether leaving a very large package in front of someone's door is indeed a breach of a duty of care that is owed to plaintiffs.
So you would abstract from minor then this kind of more general duty of due care that can be applied not just in the tripwire context, but with respect to any activity undertaken on someone's porch.
Certainly, and certainly when an individual or another party is leaving something that obstructs someone's doorway or leaving something unexpected on someone's porch, whereas some as thank you.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'd like to make one quick point on 2680B and then spend the rest of my rebuttal time addressing what I perceive to be one of your main concerns. The insurance that someone can buy when they mail a package is of no value to someone who is the target of a mail bomb, and 2680B needs to take care of that. I perceive that Your Honor is concerned about ruling as a matter of law. If the facts were changed and we had someone who left a garden hose in their yard, and an invitee came and stepped on the garden hose and tripped and then brought suit, I think the court would be absolutely correct to say you don't breach an actionable duty when you leave a garden hose in your yard. And this is almost of the same magnitude.
Although, because frankly, it doesn't foreseeably give rise to likely harm?
It's not foreseeable in that when you decide this, foreseeable is a legal conclusion saying there is a duty. What you're looking at is what the magnitude of the risk is versus the benefit of what's going on and balancing those. And
that seems to me the quintessential work for the fact finder, to assess the magnitude of what's going on.
Only when the law allows it. It's not for the jury to decide every case. The court has to serve as a gatekeeper in this kind of a situation. Or you could sue your neighbor if you stepped on his garden hose and fell. The court would not let that go to trial because it's too easily argued to the jury that this person has been badly injured, then should be recompensed. It's for the court to see that there is a duty, that is a question of law that the court has to address. Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counselor.
Portrait of Madison Barker. Madison Barker lives in Pascagoula, Mississippi. From an early age, Madison was interested in art. For a short time, Madison's parents were a bit disturbed by her artwork. My son did not do this, I promise. A short hospitalization later, Madison's artwork returned to normal. As she grew older, to the detriment of effective proofreading, Madison became quite enamored with neon sculptures. As she grew older, her neon sign obsession continued to affect her attention to detail. Eventually, Madison found a quirky clientele and began to make a name for herself in Pascagoula. Madison is lucky that her friend Mason Jar often lends a hand. On July 28, 2011, Madison and Mason needed to deliver a huge custom-made sign. It was sprinkling that day. Madison pushed open the screen door with her foot and was backing out of the door. She always wears proper footwear. Madison has a narrow porch. Unbeknownst to Madison... Google Images large package. Do I need to say that louder? All right, unbeknownst to Madison, a USPS carrier had left a box propped vertically near the door of her house. Now, this carrier had had some delivery problems in the past. And her neighbor, an amateur detective, saw the carrier replace the package twice after it slipped. But did anything he did amount to negligent transmission? Whoops. When Madison opened the door, the box slid, causing Madison to stumble and fall down the steps. Madison dropped her end of the sign. Six of the neon tubes broke and the sign is irreparable. Madison is angry that she will not receive $3,600 for the sign. She also suffered a fractured ulna. Her uncovered medical expenses were $1,200. Due to her injury, she was unable to work for 3 weeks, losing even more money. Madison brought this picture to the initial client interview, telling you she could look like this and it would help her case. You told Madison that you would not take her case, but that whole fraud on the court thing, Madison remains angry. You do not miss her
I found the arguments to be particularly fine, and this is a very difficult decision and one of the hardest of my judging career, and one of the first. As counsel for the government properly noted, I was vexed, am vexed, by the idea that I could rule against a homeowner in a negligence claim as a matter of law. To me, the postal worker can be held, I read Minor for the proposition that he can be held to exercise due care with respect to obstructions that he leaves on her porch. So just as dropping the banana peel, I would have no problem pushing that to the fact finder if I felt like there was a foreseeable risk of harm, so too I think that it is a question for the fact finder whether and to what extent a very large obstruction might give rise to liability. On the second question of negligent transmission, I find that one very hard indeed. I certainly am sensitive to the argument that there may be a lot of problems of proof. I know there was a witness in this case. I don't think there will be witnesses in the generality of cases. And so though I'm mindful of that, the task before me is to interpret the intent of Congress, not to make policy. And given the very limited language, loss and miscarriage, and given further what I take to be the implicit understanding in COSAC that whatever negligent transmission meant, it did not encompass negligently driving mailmen. And I don't think that court intended to make anything turn on whether the mail truck was full of mail, and therefore I didn't get a chance to ask you, but would have, whether that might be encompassed within the negligent transmission concept definition you proffered. My sense is that negligent transmission ought to be construed narrowly, therefore I rule that negligent transmission involves damage to the package or letter itself while in transit and is not sufficiently elastic to preclude plaintiff's suit. Thank you.
Against Ms. Dickman, who did a superb job. Please join me again in a rousing hand for both parties. Thank you very much, and court is dismissed.